The goal of new Twitter is to be as fair and even-handed as possible, so not favoring any political ideology, but just yeah, being fair at all.
Yeah. Okay, Elon Musk, in 2023, what changed, you liar?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Nope, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in L.A., 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains, KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ. Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ. In Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK. Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet, on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com, still celebrating the L.A. Dodgers big win, heading to the World Series after Sunday night. Welcome to the Bradcast, where we are celebrating. Are you celebrating, Desi Doyen?
Of course. Why not?
You don't care, do you?
Not really. You know, I've been both in L.A. and New York, so I like both teams. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I know. That's another way of saying you're rooting for the Yankees. But you can't say that here on Los Angeles
No, we bleed Dodger blue.
In another important contest coming up, Donald Trump's campaign suggested that he would begin previewing his closing arguments for the 2024 presidential election on this past Saturday night. With Election Day, the last chance for Americans to cast their ballots, now just 2 weeks away. And so then the former president kicked off his rally in Latrobe, Pennsylvania on Saturday night with a detailed story about the late golfing legend Arnold Palmer, who was born in Latrobe, and about the size of his genitalia. As AP described it in their article headlined, quote, Trump kicks off a Pennsylvania rally by talking about Arnold Palmer's genitalia. Yes, that's what happened. Trump spent 12 full minutes on the topic at the top of his speech and even suggested how much more fun the night would have been if Palmer, who died in 2016, could join him on stage. According to Palmer's daughter, he wouldn't have, as she said her father was, quote, appalled by Trump and by his, quote, lack of civility and lack of character and would, quote, cringe at him if he were alive today. I'll spare you the specifics of Trump's remarks about the golfer.
Thank you.
You're welcome, which was followed by him later telling the crowd that Kamala Harris, who he intentionally mispronounces as Kamala, is, quote, crazy. And then he used profanity that I literally cannot repeat on FCC radio to describe her before calling her, quote, the worst vice president in U.S. history. So I guess the size of Arnold Palmer's genitalia and using expletives to describe his opponent, Vice President Harris, Kamala Harris, is sort of what we can expect from Donald Trump in his closing argument as to why he should be allowed back into the White House for another 4 years after spending the last week or two repeating that he may use the U.S. military to go after his perceived domestic political enemies. Kamala Harris, on the other hand, has been offering a closing argument detailing her specific policy proposals and warning about the dangers of electing a man bent on retribution for his perceived enemies who tried to steal the last election, as he claims. In fact, he tried to steal the last election, and from all of evidence available, he intends to try to do so again. This time, of course, he's had a bit more time to plan, and he has an army of actual supporters who are primed and ready to go, if nothing else, by having been infuriated with out-and-out blatant lies by both Donald Trump himself and hundreds of millions of dollars worth of support for those lies by a few of the nation's billionaires, including perhaps the most notable today, immigrant billionaire Elon Musk, who's turned to the hard right and willingness to repeat Donald Trump's lies every day on Twitter, now called X by him, since he purchased the social media site, has all become much more disturbing by the day, by the tweet, I should say. That, after Elon Musk pledged after buying the site that the best way for Twitter to grow is to grow its credibility was to remain politically neutral, as you heard at the top of the show. That was then. The social media site is decidedly different now. We will be joined shortly by both a longtime expert in the administration of elections and of voting systems and of Twitter, where he served as their chief of civic integrity back when the now far-right neo-Nazi-leaning website actually had at least some civic integrity. So with that in mind, let's begin here. Even in the non-battleground state of California, I suspect our listeners here are seeing their mailboxes and their email inboxes and favorite social media sites blasting all sorts of last-minute pitches from and for and against various candidates and ballot propositions with the election just 2 weeks away. Many of these ads are put out by so-called super PACs backing or opposing any number of candidates and ballot initiatives. Many of the ads are meant to target certain very specific groups with their message. In areas of Michigan, for example, with large numbers of Arab and Muslim voters, those voters have recently been seeing ads, digital ads that read, quote, "Kamala Harris stands with Israel," with a plea to watch a video to see her record. They are purposely targeting Arab and Muslim voters with an ad that says Kamala Harris stands with Israel, which, of course, is pretty cynical and sleazy, of course. Meanwhile, in parts of Pennsylvania, another critical battleground state, digital ads are being targeted to Jewish voters that say, quote, "Two-faced Kamala Harris stands with Palestine, not our ally Israel." So one ad tells Muslim voters in a swing state that she supports Israel. Another ad in another swing state says that she supports Palestine and opposes Israel. Here's the audio, complete with the anti-Semitic tropes about Jews secretly pulling strings, from the ad targeting the Muslims in Michigan with the Kamala supports Israel message.
Vice President Harris has chosen a side, her right side. Harris has made herself clear. She stands with Israel and the Jewish people.
And joining Kamala will be her husband and top advisor, Doug Emhoff, who would be the first Jewish presidential spouse ever.
Kamala relies on her husband, Doug, for counsel on the toughest issues, like Israel's noble fight against the radical terrorists in Gaza. And when Doug talks, Kamala listens. Kamala and Doug, America's pro-Israel power couple.
America's pro-Israel power couple. That's the ad that's running in Arab and Muslim areas of the battleground state of Michigan. And here's the one that's being used to target Jewish voters in Pennsylvania, claiming Harris stands with Palestine and not Israel, replete with the announcer using Donald Trump's mispronunciation of Kamala Harris's name, just to make sure the dog whistle gets heard.
Two-faced Kamala Harris is secretly campaigning for Palestine and trying to get away with it.
In Jewish communities throughout America, questions are being asked. Why is she running ads pandering to Palestine? We must stand up to anti-Semitism. We say no more.
Kamala Harris, stop pandering to Palestine and stand with our ally Israel.
So confusing. Is she pandering to Palestine or is she supporting Israel? Diametrically opposed messages, at least on the surface. In one, Kamala Harris supports Israel. In the other, she does not. And guess what? Both of those ads are run by the very same group. Both digital ads are funded by the same political action committee called Future Coalition PAC. And it is just one of several that is bankrolled by right-wing big tech billionaire and Donald Trump supporter Elon Musk. It's one of several such groups that are being bankrolled by the billionaire and one of the world's richest men, if not the richest man in the world. Both of those two cynical ads aim to help Donald Trump by cleaving Jewish and Arab American voters away from Harris in key states at a time when both groups are deeply invested in Israel's U.S.-backed wars in Gaza and Lebanon, albeit usually for very divergent reasons. Musk has become increasingly crucial to funding Trump's political operation and is also funding one of the major super PACs that are responsible for Trump's get-out-the-vote efforts. According to a new FEC filing, Musk has given nearly $75 million to America PAC, a super PAC that was formed by the billionaire, which has become a critical pro-Trump field organization in the seven battleground states. The Future Coalition PAC is funded by yet another group called Building America's Future, which, with the help of Elon Musk and a handful of other billionaires, has raised more than $100 million, according to the New York Times. It also emerged last week that Building America's Future is funding Duty to America PAC, a super PAC that aims to peel young men and black voters away from the Democratic Party with similarly cynical, similarly false messaging. According to Haley Seufer, the CEO of the Jewish Democratic Council of America, in a statement about the two different ads that you just heard, one claiming Harris's support for Israel, the other claiming she opposes Israel, both funded by the same group, being funded by the Future Coalition PAC. Seufer said, quote, "These ads aim to drive a wedge between minority communities by exploiting bigotry and disinformation," adding, quote, "We condemn it in the strongest possible terms. It is appalling and on brand for Donald Trump." But that's not all. Not by a long shot, as the sleazy season gets fully underway. An initiative called Progress 2028 that purports to be Kamala Harris's liberal counter to the far-right Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 is actually run, in fact, by a dark money network supporting not Kamala Harris, but former President Donald Trump. And you will never guess who's behind it. As Anna Massaglia reported at Open Secrets last week, the dark money group Building America's Future, which reportedly received over $100 million in funding from Musk and a few other donors, is at the helm of the network that is pushing this so-called Progress 2028. The newest effort to benefit from their largesse is, in fact, Progress 2028, which Building America's Future registered as a fictitious name on September 23rd. And created this website 3 days later, according to Open Secrets' analysis of corporate filings and internet records. The Progress 2028 manifesto draws clear parallels to Project 2025, the actual right-wing blueprint for restructuring the executive branch under the next Republican administration that was developed by the Heritage Foundation and written by many who worked in or with the Trump administration. Some of the policies listed on the fake Progress 2028 page highlight disproven and misleading claims about Harris's positions. Policies listed included, quote, empowering undocumented immigrants, unquote, and expanding Medicaid to undocumented immigrants. Undocumented immigrants are the backbone of our country, the phony website made to look like an official Kamala Harris website reads. And to help spread the fake website, some voters have reported receiving text messages directing them to the Progress 2028 page with messages like this, quote, Kamala Harris will support a nationwide gun buyback program. A mandatory buyback is the only way to keep our streets safe. That is not Kamala Harris's position. One text message received by a voter in Michigan from Progress 2028, as reported by TPM's Josh Marshall, reads, quote, Kamala Harris believes LGBTQIA youth deserve access to gender-affirming care and safe, inclusive schools in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Kamala will ensure minors can access the care they need without fear of parental intervention. Help make our schools as trans-friendly as possible. Progress 2028 has also started pouring money into digital advertising. Since October 11, several digital ads on Facebook and Instagram have included the disclaimer paid for by Progress 2028. And while the ads appear to include pro-Harris messaging, they lead into contentious issues listed on the phony Progress 2028 site. Quote, let's remove barriers for undocumented immigrants who are undocumented, one ad states. Kamala will ensure that immigrants can access affordable housing and obtain driver's licenses with ease, it says. Josh Marshall over the weekend said that the texts and the site are clearly meant to make you think that these come from the Harris campaign or perhaps one of its associated committees. They refer to, quote, our plan, etc. The limited disclaimers say that they are paid for by Progress 2028, but campaigns often have sites with separate names or even separate funding vehicles. It would be totally normal, he says, for the Harris campaign or one of its associated committees to have set up a site with such a name. Legally speaking, however, this is funded by Progress 2028, even if Progress 2028 is a fictitious name that was created by Elon Musk's Building America's Future in late September in Virginia. If these quotes said paid for by Harris for president, well, you'd have a straight up campaign finance violation. But that's not what they're doing. They're saying it's paid for by Progress 28. So what the Musk group is doing on their website, this Progress 2028 website, at least, does not appear to be illegal. Sleazy, yes. Illegal, no. But the text messages, Josh observes, could be a very different story. Text messages like the U.S. mail and phone calls, they come under specific regulatory and even legal frameworks. If you're trying to impersonate someone via U.S. mail, phone, or texts, that can be enough to get you in some real trouble, which is very different from a website in which you can say basically anything. Still, what if any laws are being violated by all of this sleazy behavior on behalf of Donald Trump and funded by Elon Musk? Well, that's still unclear. Dishonest and purposely misleading? Obviously. Sleazy? Absolutely. A dirty trick? Well, it depends on how you define that. But unlawful? That's unclear at the moment. But what Elon Musk began to do over this past weekend, well, that, at least, according to some well-regarded legal experts, is clearly a violation of federal law. And arguably, the type of election fraud that Donald Trump and Elon Musk have been claiming, pretending, without any evidence, that Democrats are somehow committing this year. Elon Musk is dramatically ratcheting up his effort to use his fortune to help Donald Trump win the critical battleground state of Pennsylvania and is inviting new legal scrutiny along the way, according to the New York Times on Sunday. Mr. Musk announced on Saturday night during a rally in Harris, Pennsylvania, that he would give $1 million, quote, randomly once a day to a registered Pennsylvania voter who has signed a petition put together by his super PAC. The sweepstakes is part of Musk's push to register voters in the battleground state before the deadline on Monday. Quote, "We want to try to get over a million, maybe 2 million voters in the battleground states to sign the petition in support of the First and Second Amendment." He said at the campaign event, "We are going to be awarding $1 million randomly to people who have signed that petition every day from now until the election." The first $1 million winner, the first person who received $1 million from Elon Musk for signing his petition, the first registered voter to do so, was handed a giant check. It was obviously to a Trump supporter at his event in Harrisburg, saying, quote, "So anyway, you're welcome." He then announced the second winner on Sunday afternoon during an event in Pittsburgh, handing out another huge check on stage, adorned with big signs reading "Vote Early." In an interview on Sunday on NBC's Meet the Press, Pennsylvania's Democratic governor and the state's former attorney general, Josh Shapiro, said that Musk's giveaway of $1 million a day was, quote, "deeply concerning" and, quote, "something that law enforcement could take a look at."
Governor, let me ask you about a development we learned about overnight. Elon Musk says he will be giving away $1 million every day to random voters who sign his super PAC's petition. You are a former attorney general. Is this legal?
I think there are real questions with how he is spending money in this race, how the dark money is flowing, not just into Pennsylvania, but apparently now into the pockets of Pennsylvanians. That is deeply concerning. Look, Musk obviously has a right to be able to express his views. He's made it very, very clear that he supports Donald Trump. Obviously, we have a difference of opinion. I don't deny him that right. But when you start flowing this kind of money into politics, I think it raises serious questions that folks may want to take a look at.
Yeah. Serious questions that folks may want to take a look at. Giving away $1 million a day? To voters who do what we ask them to do, like register to vote and sign my petition. Since introducing that petition earlier this month, Musk has gradually been increasing the financial payout to encourage people to sign it. Musk initially offered people who refer signers $47 per referral. See, 47. Donald Trump wants to be the 47th president. He then increased the offer to $100 and said that he would pay both the signatory and the referrer directly, setting up a scheme where referrers could receive thousands and thousands of dollars. Musk, according to The Guardian's Hugo Lowell, observed after the giveaway on Saturday night that Musk is essentially incentivizing likely Trump voters in Pennsylvania to register to vote. The petition is to support the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, so basically Republican voters, but they also have to be registered to vote. So if they were not already registered to vote, they would do so now in order to get in on some of this sweet, sweet money.
It sounds really wildly illegal. I hope that we do find out whether it is illegal or not before the election.
Me too. Brendan Fisher, a campaign finance lawyer, a frequent guest on this program over the years, told the Times 2 weeks ago when this began at $47 that he thought the first iteration of the idea, the $47 per referral structure, was legally in bounds, but that he has since become increasingly alarmed. Brendan said, quote, "I thought the initial arrangement was lawful because the PAC was just paying one person who referred another person to sign a petition that itself made no reference to registering or voting. The latest version of the plan, however," he added, "comes much closer to the legal line." He said there would be few doubts about the legality if every Pennsylvania-based petition signer were eligible, but conditioning the payment on registration, he said, that arguably violates the law, which prohibits giving anything of value to induce or reward a person for registering to vote. A guy who is usually a bit more conservative on these matters, noted election law professor Rick Hassan of the UCLA School of Law's Safeguarding Democracy Project. Well, he was more direct in detailing in a blog item on Saturday night, right after Musk revealed his $1 million a day offer. He was more direct in describing what he described as Musk's, quote, clearly illegal vote buying offer. He said, though, maybe some of the other things that Musk was doing were of murky legality. This one, the $1 million, is clearly illegal, according to Hassan. He says, see 52 U.S.C. 10307, Section C, quote, whoever knowingly or willfully pays or offers to pay or accepts payment either for registration to vote or for voting shall be fined not more than $10,000 or, because $10,000, who cares, but they could also be imprisoned for not more than 5 years or both. And of course, while $10,000 means little to Elon Musk, it might to those people who receive the money, because apparently it's breaking the law if you accept the payment. Hassan also cites the DOJ Election Crimes Manual on bribery to encourage voting or registering to vote. Quote, the bribe may be anything having monetary value, including cash, liquor, lottery chances, and welfare benefits like food stamps. For an offer or payment to violate Section 10307C, he says, it must have been intended to induce or reward the voter for engaging in one or more acts necessary to cast a ballot. That, of course, would be registration. Hey, you got to get registered if you want to win the $1 million. Section 10307C, he says, does not apply to payments made to signature gatherers, for example, for voter registration such individuals may obtain, but such payments become actionable under Section 10307C if they are shared with the person who is being registered. You can pay someone to go out and get registrations, but if that person then says, all right, please sign this and register and I'll give you 10 bucks, nope, can't do it. How about if I give you $1 million? Nope, can't do it either. The total payout for the $1 million awards, one per day between Saturday and Election Day, should cost Musk's super PAC around $18 million. That's, you know, chump change for the world's wealthiest man, who after buying Twitter has since turned it into a disinformation factory where almost every user on the system sees Elon Musk's own constant posts, including one after another, claiming that Democrats, falsely claiming that Democrats, are committing election fraud and that they are bringing millions of non-citizens into the country to vote and to help Kamala Harris steal the election, even though it is unlawful in all 50 states for non-citizens to vote in federal elections, and there is zero evidence of more than the tiniest handful of non-citizens, we're talking a dozen or less, voting in federal elections over the past decade or two, usually because they didn't know that they could not and somehow managed to accidentally slip through the protections against it because they had a green card, thought they were entitled to. And at the same time, Elon Musk is out there actually committing very real election fraud. Still, with an election believed to be as tight and close as this one, at least according to pre-election polling, if you believe that it's accurate, Donald Trump and Republicans and his supporters, like Elon Musk, have been repeatedly making false claims about non-citizens voting in elections. And Musk now owns one of the largest platforms in the world to make the lies that will definitely be cited by Team Trump if he loses, as he once again tries to steal it from Democrats between Election Day on November 5 and Inauguration Day on January 20. Again, only if he loses. Sadly, pathetically, that's not the only lie that Elon Musk is peddling in his campaign rallies and on X, or the site still known as Twitter. And those lies are just as dangerous, if not necessarily unlawful, as we will discuss next with Eddie Perez, who has the distinction of being both a longtime election system expert and a former top Twitter official. His thoughts on all of this and how election procedures really help to prevent the type of fraud that Trump and Musk and friends are pretending is occurring, even as they commit their very own actual election fraud. That's all next on the broadcast, 2 weeks out from Election Day. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't touch that dial.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and the Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At the Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
This is where the party ends. I can't stand here listening to you and your racist friend. I know politics bore you, but I feel like a hypocrite talking to you and your racist friend.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Thanks for sticking with us. Here is a timeless dictum that aptly applies to election administration. Everything looks suspicious when you don't know how anything works. That is Edward Perez, board member at the Open Source Election Technology Institute, a longtime former director of product management, also at the Texas-based Hart Inner Civic voting machine company, one of a handful of them in the U.S., and he is also a former top official at Twitter, who ran its civic integrity team back when Twitter had a civic integrity team and arguably civic integrity prior to the richest man in the world, Elon Musk, buying the social media site, changing its name to X, inviting back all the conspiracy theorists and neo-Nazis that had previously been banned, including the former president of the United States. And then using the site to offer months of out-and-out disinformation on behalf of that former and potentially future president, whom Musk has also donated at least $100 million to help get him elected to another term. As Perez continued on Friday in his opinion piece at the MSNBC website headlined, "I ran Twitter's civic integrity team. Elon Musk has no idea how elections work." Quote, "Elections are a complex mix of diverse laws, procedures, technology, and exhaustive manual cross-checks. Contrary to what many believe, elections officials do not blindly accept the numbers that come out of voting machines, nor do they count the mail ballots that are delivered to election offices without validating them first. Free and fair elections," he writes, "rely on a multi-layered system of processes based on human due diligence and automated technology tools. Unfortunately," he notes, "this complexity takes longer to explain than simplistic conspiracy theories." Oh, don't I know it. And with less than 20 days remaining before Election Day, he writes, "we are seeing a marked uptick in the number of wrong-headed claims about how elections are run. The latest prominent public figure to stoke public confusion and efforts to undermine public confidence in elections is Elon Musk," he says. At a recent town hall-style appearance in the battleground state of Pennsylvania, Musk went full MAGA. The billionaire repeated the same lies that Donald Trump peddled 4 years ago about mail-in voting and voting technology, including referring to the false claims that Dominion voting systems somehow helped to rig the 2020 election for Joe Biden. Here's just a few of Musk's remarks at that rally for Donald Trump.
"A lot of people on the Dem side will say there's no cheating, there's no cheating. And I'm like, you've made it impossible to actually prove that there's cheating. But, you know, there's always a sort of question of, like, say, the Dominion voting machines. It is weird that the you know, I think they're used in Philadelphia and in Maricopa County, but not in a lot of other places. Doesn't that seem like a heck of a coincidence?
Yeah, heck of a coincidence. If it was anything close to true. These lies, writes Perez, were familiar to me from my time in charge of Twitter's civic integrity team, fighting disinformation and misinformation on the platform. Eddie left the company not too long before Musk purchased it. The claim about Dominion was particularly noteworthy, he says, given the company has not been shy about legal actions over such lies. Back in 2021, for example, Dominion filed a defamation lawsuit against Fox News, leading to a $787.5 million settlement with the network 2 years later. Fox did not want to go on trial over that. $750 million they were willing to pay to avoid that trial. He says, I'm not optimistic that Musk has the self-control to avoid poking the bear with the possibility of more defamation lawsuits, but he would be on safer ground if he stopped talking about election administration and voting technology. He doesn't understand the facts. Joining us now to help us understand the facts that apparently Musk does not or does not want to or does understand but lies about them anyway is our old friend Eddie Perez, former former director of information integrity at Twitter, where he led the civic integrity team, formerly of the Hart Inner Civic Voting Machine Company in Austin, Texas, and currently a member of the board of directors at the OSET Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit election technology research, development, and education organization. And he also has over 20 years in the field of elections, election information, and election technology. Oh, Eddie Perez, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, Brad. I'm so happy to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you. When I first, when I saw that Musk was not only dumping tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into the effort to elect Donald Trump, along with his efforts to use his platform and now his public rallies to lie about elections, I knew I had to talk to you, given your both your Twitter background and your election technology background. I got a lot to ask you about today, but let me start with debunking a few of Musk's claims here, if we could first. Musk says it's, quote, weird and, quote, a heck of a coincidence that Dominion voting machines are used in Philadelphia, in Pennsylvania, and in Maricopa County, which is Phoenix, the largest county in the battleground state of Arizona. My understanding, with a simple search of verifiedvoting.org, is that that is entirely untrue, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really remarkable. The power that somebody can have for something that can be so easily disproved. It is true that Dominion voting system was in Maricopa County, but for Elon Musk to say it's really not in very many other places and to falsely say it's in Philadelphia is just plain wrong. I mean, an eighth grader looking on the internet could have found that out.
Yep.
But with his money and his platform, it's going a lot farther. The reality is that Dominion is actually one of the two largest voting technology companies in the U.S. They have about a 40% market share. There's just no reason to think that, oh, somebody is weirdly cherry-picking these strategic places where we're going to plant Dominion machines. They are a significant provider in the marketplace. And City of Philadelphia doesn't use them.
Right.
They use one of Dominion's competitors.
Right. ESNS is in Philadelphia. And in Maricopa, by the way, it's not voting machines. They use vote tabulators made by Dominion. But everyone there, unless they're disabled and need to vote on an assistive device, everyone there votes on a hand-marked paper ballot that is, yes, counted by a tabulator made by Dominion, but can also be counted by hand if there is any question about the results, as there apparently was in 2020. So they counted them by hand and found, guess what? Joe Biden defeated Donald Trump by even more votes than was originally reported. Eddie Musk also said, quote, when you have mail-in ballots and no proof of citizenship, it's almost impossible to prove cheating. Your response, is it impossible to prove that there is cheating in elections, be it by mail-in ballots or in-person voting?
It is not impossible to prove that. And the simple reason why is that whether a voter is going to vote in person or whether they're going to submit a paper ballot through the mail, none of those actual acts of voting happen without a whole set of processes to verify This is actually an eligible voter. We know that without any doubt. We know that they are indeed in the proper place to be voting, the proper precinct, the proper vote center, or alternatively, if they have a mail ballot, there's lots of ways to know. Did we in fact mail a ballot to that voter? We have a paper ballot that has been returned to our office. Are all of the markings on that envelope in the very specific and very technical format of our barcode? Does it actually match the voter's ballot style with the contest that they're supposed to be voting on? And lastly, does everything about the paper ballot meet all of our technical specifications? You made a great point, Brad, at the top when you mentioned technology in voting is never used in a vacuum. There are lots of additional manual ways and cross-checks where I think the key point is it's extremely difficult, if not almost impossible, for cheating to happen without detection. Mm-hmm. And that's really the critical point. Any one of these failures is basically a tripwire where immediately an election official knows, wait a minute, something's not right here. Mm-hmm. And then it gets investigated and you know whether you're going to accept and count a ballot from a valid voter or not.
So you can't just go out and Xerox these ballots, fill out a whole bunch of them, send them in some random envelope. That is just not how it works. Now, Eddie, when you led the Civic Integrity Unit at Twitter, what might you have done with tweets by someone like Musk, who's been saying this stuff and worse on Twitter now for weeks, if not months, to his more than 200 million followers, when they made such easily disproven claims like Dominion voting machines are used in Philadelphia and Maricopa and not in many other places, or that it was impossible to prove cheating in American elections. What would have happened under, I guess we'll call it old Twitter, when you were working there?
Sure. You know, the short answer to your question, Brad, is Twitter took seriously. What would have happened is there's different ways that we would redirect users to actual credible information. And you do that not through censorship, not through taking things down. You know, it's really unfortunate how sensitive a lot of people got. They were behaving like snowflakes, that if you had a post that made an obviously false claim about some election process or about voting, you might see a label on that tweet and it would simply say, hey, get the facts. Here's some more information about by-mail voting. And it might include the URL to visit the National Association of Secretaries of State. These are the top election officials across the country that are trained election professionals. And I think that it was to Twitter's credit. They just took seriously, look, we have some responsibility for having standards on the platform. We're not going to slash and burn and take people's posts down. But if we see an opportunity to send them to good information from trusted sources, why not do that? That helps voters. That helps democracy.
Wow. Sounds like a terrible infringement on their First Amendment rights. Eddie, right. Are there any such people or policies that are still in place at Twitter, what Musk now calls X, to help curb the kind of disinformation that he is spreading, that Trump is spreading, that millions of their followers are spreading just weeks from Election Day and with voting already underway in almost every state?
You know, it's a good question. And I will say, as an observer of the platform and the industry, I don't see any evidence that the kind of, you know, helpful redirection or additional context that we used to provide in the past, I don't see any indication that that's happening on the platform now. On the contrary, what is there is a lot of completely unchecked, completely unfiltered, rampantly false and easily disprovable information, but it spreads like wildfire.
I am curious, Eddie, about your response to this quote from Elon. This is from an interview with Tucker Carlson in April of 23. So it was just last year, not too long after he bought Twitter, when he was asked about the role that Twitter would play in this upcoming year's election.
The goal of new Twitter is to be as fair and even-handed as possible. So not favoring any political ideology, but just being fair to all.
Your thoughts on that, Eddie?
I don't know how to start. I mean, like, the degree to which the entire platform has obviously fallen off the deep end from that kind of commitment to being even-handed is incredible. And I think, you know, my bottom line comment to that is I think it's fair to say that Musk has thrown out the window any kind of commitment to having actual facts about the reality of how elections are run. And what we have right now is basically a referendum on whether billionaires and oligarchs are going to shape the public's understanding of how elections are run. Are they going to do that by spreading false rumors and, you know, just flooding the airwaves? Or are we going to listen to election professionals, and are we going to have standards and journalistic facts to educate the American people about how their elections are actually run with integrity?
Well, I think the billionaires seem to have the upper hand at this point because they can. They got louder microphones, apparently, and they're willing to go out and use them and pay, as I discussed in the previous segment, you know, pretty much any price, even giving voters $1 million for signing up to vote. Musk and Trump and his running mate, J.D. Vance, have cited concerns that were passed on by the federal government back in 2020 about Twitter being used at that point to potentially launder foreign disinformation about that year's elections, akin to the hacked emails from the DNC that were released before the 2016 election in an effort to hurt Hillary Clinton at the time. Were you at Twitter during the 2020 election?
I was not. Okay. I was actually in a different role at the OSINT Institute at that time, doing a lot of observation and commentary about the 2020 election. But I joined Twitter in September of 2021.
Well, I ask because Trump and Vance have been claiming that there was a push by the federal government at the time to force sites like Twitter and Facebook and so forth to censor so-called conservatives. But in fact, back in 2020, it kind of blows my mind here. Back in 2020, the federal government would have been run by, wait for it, Donald Trump, not the Biden-Harris administration, which blows my mind that they continue to say somehow that Biden-Harris tried to censor the 2020 election on Twitter. But that said, are there not legit free speech concerns when a site as powerful as Twitter or Facebook or TikTok, when they start censoring users in some way under the guise of misinformation, saying that they're propagating misinformation, but you know, as what will certainly be seen by opportunists as an attack on free speech and ultimately a scheme to cheat in the election. Is that a real concern?
I think in general, your question is very important. I mean, absolutely. I think, speaking for me, your audience, anybody who really believes in democratic values and who takes seriously the idea that we need to protect free speech, yes, we always need to be watching for that. But at the end of the day, the most important thing that sadly I think has gotten lost in the fire hose of misinformation here is that free speech is not just a popularity contest. Free speech is not a question of which views seem to have more popularity in society today and which don't, what things are acceptable and which ones are not. Really, what Trump and Musk are describing as quote unquote free speech, in my opinion, I call it a culture war. And the reason I say that is because I think that at the end of the day, if you're going to talk about meaningful free speech, you need to be talking about whether somebody is willing to stand up to government efforts to actually try to regulate what the press talks about. Okay? Donald Trump and Elon Musk do not have a good record on that topic at all. Donald Trump, most recently, after his debate where he didn't do so great, he didn't like the questions, he didn't like the moderators from ABC. What did he say the next day? They should have their license taken away.
Right.
That's an example of a man, you know, willing to use government power.
Yep.
And Elon Musk, recent reports are also showing that he is doing not as strong a job as the old Twitter did to resisting government requests for information about X's users or content. Net-net, he's being more compliant with governments around the world that are not comfortable with what's being talked about there. And I think that that, at the end of the day, is really pointing out how neither Trump nor Musk has any business calling himself a defender of free speech.
Right, exactly. Well, he's pretending to be a free speech absolutist. He's actually putting hundreds of millions of dollars into the campaigns of a guy who just called for CBS News to be taken off the air, 60 Minutes taken off the air, NBC, ABC, every network to have their license to broadcast taken away. Never mind, they don't actually have licenses to broadcast, but I won't get into the weeds there. But Elon Musk seems to have no problem supporting that guy, even while pretending he's a free speech absolutist. Eddie Perez, putting aside the bad information we are getting from those clods, let's talk about good information to at least try to counter the lies that these guys are telling. As you know very well, I've had my own concerns about various voting systems over the years. I've encouraged voters and election officials to allow and to use verifiable hand-marked paper ballots for every voter unless they need some sort of automated assisted device to help them cast their vote, for example, if they're blind or disabled in some way. Why should voters, as you see it, have confidence in the current hodgepodge of voting systems and election procedures that we use across the country, which obviously Trump and Musk, et cetera, are hoping to undermine confidence in?
Yes. Great question. And any fair-minded person, your concerns and the historical concerns, they're fair. And that is precisely why, as I said earlier, the right way to think about how elections are run in the United States is as this multi-layered nested system that includes not just technology that you're going to blindly follow what the numbers say, but a lot of procedures and a lot of checks and a lot of manual things like the auditability of paper ballots and so forth. One of the first things that I will point out, and it's true, it's one of the better success stories in election administration, is due to advocates like yourself and places like Verified Voting that have really led the charge for post-election audits and so forth. Today in the United States and in this election, more than 97% of precincts in the U.S. are going to have some form of a voter verifiable paper ballot. And that is critical to the idea that, no, we need to be able to do rigorous post-election audits. We need to be able to do recounts. We need to basically be able to have some independence from the software itself. Mm-hmm. Again, we can't blindly trust it. The second reason that I think that voters can and should trust the election that's coming up, just yesterday, the director of CISA, Jen Easterly, which is the Cybersecurity Infrastructure Agency, was talking about how in 2024, probably even more than 2020, the general cybersecurity profile and the foundations on the ground are more secure than they have ever been. This, too, is a real success story. Whether the U.S. wanted it or not, starting in 2015, 2016, it became very clear there are nation state actors that are trying to interfere with our elections. And I think that the commitment we see on the federal level to places like CISA working with local election officials is really critical. And at the end of the day, I think that combination of scrutiny and human process and technology with paper and so forth, you mentioned earlier when they tried to do really a made-up kind of audit in Maricopa County,
yes,
which at the time I referred to it as a fraudit.
Yes.
It was not a meaningful audit. It was not done in a rigorous way according to professional standards. It was frankly a political stunt. And it took a long time to do it, but at the end of the day, what was most gratifying to me was the truth came out, as you pointed out, and the truth demonstrated that that was indeed a free and fair election in Maricopa County. There were not crazy shenanigans that were done there. And it was largely due to the really dogged investigation of local news media, just like dogs on a bone. And so I think that that level of scrutiny and transparency is going to help to educate the public in the long run.
Last, I've got really only about 30 seconds, so a completely unfair question for you, Eddie. You got any specific advice for voters amidst all of this, amidst all of what is almost certainly coming, at least if Donald
Trump
loses? Yeah.
They need to get their answers from their local elections office. You need to check your ballot before casting it. If you have a by-mail ballot and you haven't returned it yet, I recommend turning it in to a drop box. And when you see inflammatory images, ask yourself, what's the story behind this? What's the context? And find out where it came from.
Eddie Perez is a member of the board of directors of the Open Source Election Technology Institute, a nonpartisan, nonprofit election technology research, development, and education organization, and former director for information integrity at Twitter, where he led the civic integrity team, and a longtime friend at this point of the show. Delighted to have you here. Thank you so much, Eddie. We may be yelling and screaming, I don't know, at this point, before and or after the election when we need some help and advice. Thank you for all you do, and thank you for joining us today on the broadcast.
Thank you, Brad. Always a pleasure.
You can find his work at OSET foundation.org. And you can, well, he's still got an account on Twitter at Eddie1Perez, but he is no longer really active there. You should find him on Blue Sky, where he is Eddie1Perez as well. All right, we have got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my board operator today, Wendell Handy, and to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. There is no paywall there. Drop me an email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site, yes, still known as Twitter, I am the Brad Blog. We will see you there until we see you here, hopefully tomorrow. I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
To the Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.